Yowza! Welcome back to the Chomedy Podcast, everybody. How the heck have you been? I should say, welcome me back. I know you've all been waiting, and I sincerely apologize that it's been so long since I've put another podcast out. It's been about almost 3 months, and I'm sorry. Do you still want to talk? Do you still want to talk to me? I mean, I got a lot going on. How have you been? More importantly, how is the family? How are the kids? What's mom and dad doing? I know they're growing up so fast. It's if I haven't said it already, it's Ken Allen, and it's another episode, and it's a little overdue. And the reason is I just got so busy with everything else going on, and I've been going through a lot of changes and things that are happening here at work and in my life, and then it got to be about a month and a month and a half, and then I just said, well, shit, I kind of just hit a block. I hit a podcaster's block. It's like a writer's block, but you just can't open your mouth on the camera. Well, there is no camera. This is the theater of the mind, ladies and gentlemen. I wanted to come out with something that was really good, and I kept waiting and waiting for inspiration to hit, and it just wouldn't hit. I couldn't think of anything. I didn't have any impetus. I was impotent. Well, vocally anyway, and I shouldn't say it's never happened to me before. Come on. But really, I got kind of stymied and didn't know what to talk about next. So the fact that it had been so long made it's harder to come back, and I wanted to come back with an even bigger one. And I was just so exhausted from everything else that was going on that I didn't do anything. And inaction is the worst action. Remember that. Remember that. The only thing that beats a fail is a not try. I always like that saying. So just get out and swing at the ball. Fucking choke up, whatever you need to do. Don't have to go for the fences. Just get a base hit. Hey, just swing hard. So here's me swinging hard. I want to talk about burnout. That's all I've really been feeling for the last 3 months. I've been burnt the fudge. It's just been tough. It's just been rough. I have not, been able to get my bearings. And because of that, because of which the podcast has suffered. And you've been waiting, and I apologize. I mean, I've been sincerely to you, Al out there. Thank you for the emails and the blog saying, hey, what the fuck, man? We've been waiting on a new one. Will you just please put something up so I can have something to listen to while I commute? Sorry, here it is. It's going to be short and sweet, hopefully. But I want to talk about burnout. That's how I've been feeling. It's been 10 years as a fire medic. It's been 10 years as a medic. It's been 8 years as a fire medic. The first two and a half were as volunteer. Then I was overseas. Then I was at AMR in Oakland. Then San Jose, finally. So, but 10 years have gone by. Has anything changed in the job? We've gotten some new protocols. We got rid of some old ones. We got some new standards of care. We got rid of some other ones. We have to call base. We got to call dad a lot more, it seems now, because more people are screwing up and it's faster to get to the hospital. Have the patients changed? Has any of this done any good? It's been 10 years and I'm struggling to see the answers to that. However, it's in the way that you look at it, ladies and gentlemen. Now, and I've been talking to captains and chiefs that are retiring after 30 years, after 33 years, after 35, and they're asking themselves the same question. Did they do any good? Now, that's a question that pops into your brain, and you kind of step back, and it shakes you, and you get frustrated. And it's just something you're going to think. It's something I'm going to have to think anyway. That's what I'm telling myself. Because there have been changes. There are individual changes. Are there any paradigm shifts? Are there any big shifts like they saw, in the late 60s when we started to have mobile ambulance units with medically trained personnel on board and quicker times to the hospital, you see a dramatic change in the survivability of patients with casualty. To casualty patients. So there are not those huge shifts, not the kinds of shifts you saw with maybe early intubation and drugs, but in terms of the little things, maybe the minute shifts we were doing with patient care, with big calls, there are changes if you're looking for them. But, you know, that's a big cause for burnout. You just look around and think, what the hell am I doing? And another big thing is we're medics, we're nurses and doctors and firemen. We love the big crazy call that comes in. That's why I got into this. I know that's why I got into this. I didn't think that was me until I actually think about the images I had of myself of literally kung fu kicking down a door with my turnouts on. And mind you, I was like 24 when I thought of this in the back of my head. Shame on me. Kung fu kick. Roundhouse in the door, wearing full turnouts, running in, grabbing a patient out, stripping off all of my turnouts, and then starting IV drugs and going, oh, cool, kind of a superhero. That's what got me into this profession, but I don't think that I like conflict. Who the fuck am I kidding? What, I don't like high adrenaline? I don't like heat and heated arguments? Are you crazy? So that can contribute to your relationships. But that's it. That's why I got into this job. And once you start doing this job, you eventually realize. I didn't quickly realize this because at first it's really, everything's insane and novel and fun. But you start realizing the MCIs, the gunshot wounds, the real cardiac STEMIs that you're getting, that you show up right on the precipice of them starting to die, and you just get in there and you give it nitro, you diagnose and you give your aspirin, you know, get your IVs, you know, even just early defibrillation on somebody that dies on you, and boom, you get them back and you get into the cath lab and they walk out and they bring you a cake. You know, those calls where you're sweating, gunshot wounds, I already said that, stabbings, you know, crazy fires that you're going on, and calls where you're doing everything, starting IVs and getting the tube, and, you know.
Ballers. Ken, do you want to join your crew? We're watching ballers.
See this? This is what happens. And that ballers brings up a good point.
It's up to you.
That's excellent. I couldn't have planned that better. I'm being called down to watch an HBO program. But I want to get, we're getting through this, goddammit. We're not stopping. I will not stop. So what makes you burn out? Is it the high adrenaline stuff like that? I absolutely don't get burnt out on that. There's some crazy calls where you see things that you don't like. Usually it's kids that are hurt that I've seen that bother me, or it's people that are hurt that look like my family, and I can really relate to them, or somebody in my same walk of life that something happens to, I could be that person, but by the grace of God, I'm not. And that stuff gets me, or the tragic stuff, you know, young people getting killed. That guts you. It kills you. And sometimes that's enough for people to just get out of the profession. Sometimes that's enough to just say, all right, I'm tapping out, I'm done, and I'm out of here. Or, you know, an even worse case, they end up drinking themselves to death, or they you know, kill themselves flat out. And that's crazy. And if that's the case, you got to go talk to people and stop that shit from happening. But for the most part, that's not what causes the extreme burnout that I see in veterans and really creeping in the corners of my mind now. It's the small calls. It's not the adrenaline pumping calls. It's the cortisol calls. It's the one when it comes in and you know what it is, you cringe and like literally your shoulders creep up on your neck. That's where apparently you can store all your cortisol. It's, you know, the stress, it's the continual stress. And everybody knows this if you've gone to any PTSD stress training or whatever. It's the small lingering frustration and boredom and that little, oh God, I hate that little thing in your gut. on a continuous basis that just it kills your enthusiasm for the job. And when you've gone on enough calls where you're just getting toe pain at 4 a.m, you know, or the homeless guy that's yelling at you because you're waking him up, or he's yelling at you because you're on the other side of the railroad tracks and he's screaming at you, throwing rocks, saying, "I'm over here and I can't walk." That shit lights a little fire that starts to fucking burn out. And I'm telling you, it's not bad to feel that. It's okay if you got to say, "God damn it, that guy pissed me off." You know what? It doesn't change your patient care. You know, that's the thing that I keep trying to work out. You don't let that change your patient care, and you don't let that happen to the next patient you come across. People will remind you of other people. You got to treat them individually. And so that's what I've been struggling with. Because, I mean, I woke up the other night and I went on a call. I went on 4 calls between 1:45 and 6. And on about the 4th call, I thought back and I thought, so I've been doing this for about 10 years. Have I ever gotten a call between 2 and 6 where I actually made a difference? And I could think of 1 call, maybe 2. It's a little, well, and if you think your times in Oakland, it's a little bit different, especially in early 2000s when I was there. It was a little bit crazier with gunshots and stuff. But people that are stabbing and shooting pass out at about 2:30 or 3. People that are on speed or whatever are usually kind of nestled in their speed hovels at about, you know, 2 or 3 in the morning too. And they're not usually getting into shit. So, not usually. And I had just not gotten those, apparently. So it's just this thought of, like, really, after this many times and this much taxing on my REM sleep, have I ever really gotten any benefit and done any good for anybody that's been out there? So really, is it just me that's suffering? Sorry, can you hear that? That's the world's smallest violin. I know, I don't want to do this. This is why I didn't want to do this one, because it's just going to sound like I'm just pissing people off. I want to punch my dick in the face right now because I'm pissing on all you. And I'm not trying to be, I'm not, promise myself it's not going to be one of those poor me fucking up podcasts. So onwards and upwards. The problem is that, why do we have so many homeless in the streets? Well, there's a lot of people in society that have a lot of ideas about it. Why do we have people that are just hanging on by a thread and they call you and they have back pain, they got arm pain, leg pain, they can't breathe one night, they're too cold, they're too hot, and it's every symptom down the line. And you know they have atrial fib, high blood pressure, diabetes, they've had 2 strokes, 2 heart attacks, and it's like, how do we have these many people around? I want to posit one thought. The interesting thing to think about is, yeah, we always had drunks. We always had homeless. I mean, pretty much since the advent of alcohol and drugs, we've had these people in society. And fine, I think that there's a purpose for them there. And there's also, I mean, there's a niche that they're filling. That's fine. But there's a new niche that's been created, which is, and think about this, there are people that are hanging on right now only because of Western medication, Western drugs, Western meds. These people are on, they're the ones that when you show up, they hand you a Ziploc baggie, the big one that fits 4 pizza slices, not the little one that has the kids turkey and with a crust cut off sandwich bag. I'm talking the big bag that you could put half a chicken in. And it's full of meds. And they say, I take everything in this, and then I have another couple of meds sitting by the bed. And you think, how are you still alive, and how are not these meds killing you? But they're hanging on, but for those medications. They have to take this one, but they have to take this one to counteract that. But they have to take this one because in case any of those have, not an exponential effect. Oh, it's going to kill me. Is that what it is? No, it's, you know what it is and you're screaming it right now. You know, when two drugs, synergistic effect on each other. But so they have to take a third drug that does this, but they have to take a drug for high blood pressure. And if they get too bloated, they got to take an HCTZ, but they got to ditch. And it just, and you fucking think, there's no way this person should be alive. And you know what? About 30 years ago, none of them were. All of these patients had died. All of them had died probably after their first heart attack. All of them had died off. We literally have created an entirely new society of sick by allowing Western medicine to push things this far. Do I think that's wrong? No, I don't, because there are people that have gotten a second lease on life and move forward and really work at it. There's another group of people that sit and are supposed to be on all these meds but don't take them on a regular basis, get screwed up, get to the hospital, get fixed up. You know, they give them their meds and then they come back and then they do the same thing over again. The ones that say, I can't walk, but there's six piles of vodka bottles sitting around them. So obviously their priorities allow them to walk, but their necessity for anything else, they could just call mom and dad. They just call 911 and we show up. Am I pissing people off now? And I'm starting to think that I am, but you know what? It's a fucking fact of life. And I see this and I've looked at these people and I've literally started just to think, you're going to die. You want to die. There's no other way around it. You have literally had two heart attacks. You were dead. At one point, you were defibrillated and brought back to life. And now you're still killing yourself. You're doing the same activities. You don't want to be here. I mean, literally, you don't try to live anymore. So why are we trying to keep them alive? Whoa, right? Why are we doing this? Now, I understand it, that we, of course, we're going to try and do this and do this to people. And depending on how you think about life, federalist or anti-federalist or socialist or libertarian, anarchist, however you want to think, you know, I'm still doing my job and I'm still going to take care of them and I'm still bringing them to the hospital. But I'm going to counsel them and say things, you know, in plain English, you are doing the same things to yourself that got you literally killed in the past. I want you to realize it won't be long until you die again, unless you make serious changes to yourself and your lifestyle. And I feel like that is my need as a professional caregiver to tell you that. It's not in a mean way. It's the truth. It's the same way that we don't tell somebody they're going to live if we really don't think they're going to live. So that's been something that's been floating around. And you know what? I owe it to the public and I owe it to you to do that and to myself. Because if you're just sitting there and you're babysitting and you're really not trying to change them, then really all you are is a reactionary device and it's not doing anybody any fucking good. And this person's going to keep doing this and they're going to just keep living in depressive and oppression until they die and they're going to make their family terrible. Or you finally talk to them, you lay on the truth and you say, it's either this or you're dead. And they make a change and they actually do something better for their family. So if you try everything else out and it doesn't work, this is the hard pill to swallow. So anyway, that's what I'm trying now. If I see that, I'm not sticking around and I'm not keeping my mouth shut. It needs to be said and they need to understand the facts of life. Just like all of us do. Just like everything, everybody needs to know this stuff. Whew. That was my rant for this. How'd you feel about that? Fucking deep? You pissed? Then write to the Tromedy podcast and say, hey, asshole, who the fuck do you think you are? I welcome it. Send it. Send it. We're on Facebook. Tromedy Podcast. You can find us on Stitcher Radio at thetromedypodcast.com. And we're on iTunes Radio, as well as our own website, www.tromedypodcast.com. That stands for World Wide Web. And Tromedy is a mixture between trauma and comedy. And COM, I believe, stands for commercial. So this is on the internet, and you can reach me at any time, and we'll have it out. All right. So, does any of this stuff work? I don't know. I really, you know, this is what I'm getting at. I've seen enough of these, and I've talked to enough of them, and I've really, you know, just figured, how can I do this? Well, my sister told me an analogy when I was a kid. I always wanted to share it with somebody, and now I'm sharing it. The starfish analogy. It's this idea, and it goes with what I've been talking about. There's a kid walking down the beach, and there's all these starfish for miles, washed up. And he's walking by, and he's picking one up, throwing it in the ocean. Picking up, throwing it in the ocean. This guy walks by, and he goes, "Kid, there's millions of starfish on this beach. You're not making a difference. How could you possibly make a difference?" The kid picks one up, he throws it in the water, and he says, "It mattered to that one." Oh, I think I fucked that fucking up, but but that's it. Really, what's it matter? You got to believe that it matters. The one time you do something, it will matter to that person. It will matter. Don't treat these people as an archetype. Don't treat them as a character. They're actually human. They are an individual, and treat each one individually. That's why we have a court system. Because a judge can sit and review an individual case. We don't just run off basic law. We're out there. We need to be the caregiver. We're not the judge. We're the mom and dad, basically, for society. And we need to treat each person as our children. Because I believe the children of the future, even if they're halfway fucked up and in the bag and hooked around the back, they deserve our attention. And hey, asshole, you're getting paid for it. Make it your while, okay? So many people just get into this salty attitude, and it usually happens at about 5 years, which is funny to me because I'm thinking, did I ever act that way? Because holy shit, the way I look at these salty dogs that I see now that are walking around half-shaven with their shirt hanging off and acting like, all right, dear, please will you get on the gurney, please? Okay, we'll take care of it in the back. We'll take care of it in the back. And they get in the back and they just work on the PCR. And I think, you fucking douchebag. Will you fucking take some interest in your work or get out of it? Because there's plenty of people that would do it, and there are plenty of people older than you that have been doing it for longer and are doing it at a much better level. And why is that? So how do you get through burnout? So the thing is, you do have to believe. These are my ideas only. And if you have more ideas, again, Traumedy Podcast, send them in. My ideas are, you have to see each case as an individual basis. There is insight with each person that you come across. You may not believe it. You may not think that you see it. But you are continually refining your patient care with each and every single patient you come across. And by that means, you have to see that your treatment is making a difference. Even though if you look at the social waveforms, you may not see it on that. You're looking at a bell curve. You're not seeing your individual work shift that bell curve. But maybe you and 1,000 other medics treating people like you are doing is shifting the bell curve. You know what I mean by that? The curve, it's, you know, where do you fall in there? Are you the great success? Are you somewhere in the middle, or are you the ones failing out or the ones that fail out? The bell curve, look it up. So to me, it just means do individual care, individually specified for them. Treat each case as novel. I think that the issue here is not frustration. Or where does the frustration come from necessarily? I think it comes from, and burnout, it comes from boredom. You just get bored on the job. You lose your zest for it. And when you start to do that, you lose your zest for enjoying anything. So how do you combat that? Well, start talking to the patients differently. Engage in their lives. Really, just start talking to them. I mean, you're there anyway. You're going to learn something funny. Share something about your life with them. That would be funny. Do anything. Try a new type of patient care. Try cleaning off their face if it's dirty. I don't know. Something interesting that is just abnormal. Hey, if they got blackheads on their face, pop them. I swear to God, there are people out there that would do that right now. So try it out. Make the case individual. Make it novel. If you make it new and interesting, you won't be burnt out that day. Something will happen that you'll walk away with. And I think the other big thing is you got to get with a crew that you love. You got to get with a crew that understands you and somebody that you can push ideas back and forth with. I'm with this crew at 24. I fucking love them. And the guys at 18 that I'm with, it's just great. Really, sitting around the table more and more, the more you look at it, is absolutely a necessity for this job. Because you sit around and you jaw jack, and suddenly you realize people are sharing insights. People are bringing to the table, literally, to the table, interesting ways of looking at life, tips on how to handle things, just philosophies in general on the fire service, on patient care, on treatments, on physiology, anatomy, on how to live, how to deal with your family, how to handle the wife who doesn't work in the service, who doesn't understand this stuff, or the husband that doesn't, how those relationships are really important for you to know about, because you need to help them at times, and just hearing those stories are going to help you. So it really, an invaluable crew is going to keep you healthy, going to keep you sane, and keep it fun. It keeps burnout really at bay. Really, there have been guys, too, coming to me around the department saying, dude, where's the next podcast? Come on. I love listening to it. Come on, where's Traumedy? So I want to thank you guys for saying that, and girls and women. And just say, hey, gals. Hey, dudes. Here comes another one. Here's the Traumedy podcast. It's not really... Okay, so I hope this stuff's reaching you. And then if any of that doesn't work, the number one thing I think is don't lose your love. Find love. You got to find love somewhere. You got to love someone. You got to love something. You have to find it. Because really, it's the only reason that you can justify anything. It's the reason that you can justify everything, because you love something. What is love? It's going back and finding something, whatever you see it is. It's no burnout. It's everything. There's something novel about the relationship between you and that thing and that person. And it's fucking awesome. Love is awesome. And really, it really is the only thing that gets you through sleepless days, bullshit calls, hard calls, questioning your life, questioning yourself. It's why you do it. It's how you gauge life. It's the only thing that really, if you don't have it, like, life is pretty fucking meaningless. We do a bunch of random shit, and then we die. We maybe make a couple of things to go on, do random shit, and then they die. Or you love what you do and you make a difference and you help people's lives and you love your wife and you love your family and you give your family all your love. Your kids go out, hopefully bringing that love to society so that they can spread that love to people and their family. And you're making a paradigm shift into the future. But you need to have love and you need to sacrifice yourself for love in order for that shift to occur in the future. You need to put yourself out there. I need to put myself out there with everything and do this podcast. As stupid as you, it doesn't pay. It doesn't pay. I spend time deliberating, writing notes, thinking about it all the time, thinking about what everybody out there is thinking about. I do it because I love it. I love talking on this thing, and it helps me clear my mind. And in the back of my head, I'm always thinking somebody out there is listening. Somebody's getting something from this. If not a laugh or an insight, then just saying this guy's fucking talking out of his head. And if he thinks he's good at this, then I can do it. So get out there and you do a podcast, or you get out there and hug your family, or you go out there and you hug a patient, or you get out there and you hug yourselves. You know, just hug yourself so hard. Just hug yourself. Just enjoy it. Enjoy life. Don't burn out. Just find something new to laugh at. All right. That's it. It's a podcast. And remember, if you got it, ladies and gentlemen, use it. Take care.
Sit up.